the second day in the philosophy of photography. This morning, for the first talk, we have Dawn Wilson, who is lecturer in philosophy at the University of Hull. She trained at Durham and then taught at a number of other universities before Hull, including Oxford and Southampton. In addition to aesthetics and the philosophy of photography, she also works on the philosophy of the image generally and a number of topics in Wittgenstein. Her title today is Composing, Conducting, Performing, Arranging, Improvising, and Sampling, Photographers Creating Art.
Thank you very much, Anna. Thank you very much. Very nice to have this opportunity to meet you all, and also to say my thanks to Diarmid in particular for organising the event. And I've learned an enormous amount through working with Diarmid over a number of years, and I'm excited about this opportunity to be part of the new philosophy of photography. I quite like this. So, I've actually added quite a few different elements to this presentation because I was quite excited by a number of the themes that were occurring yesterday, particularly in discussion. There are a few bits in here that are added along the way, but I'll still try and keep to time as far as I can, but there's now a lot of extra stuff going on. So I thought I'd start. This whole starting point is based on things we were discussing yesterday. It struck me when we were having conversations yesterday that one of the approaches that particularly analytic philosophers of photography take is to start out with ontological questions in the area of photography. So asking the question, what is a photograph and what is a photography artwork? And what happens quite commonly is those two things just get completely run together interchangeably in quite unhelpful ways. So here's an example of where this is happening. We're told in this account that the steerage, so Alfred Stieglitz's work, the steerage, is distinct from each of its prints and from its negative. So clearly here we're talking about the artwork, the steerage. Any one of these could be destroyed without thereby destroying the steerage itself. We're left with a puzzle. What sort of thing is a photograph? So here we've got a slippage between the idea that we're talking about the steerage as an artwork, and at the same time, we're asking the question, what is the photograph? As if the steerage is a photograph. So I think that slippage between those two isn't very helpful. But also, we've got, of course, Patrick Maynard to thank for pointing us in the direction of saying, actually, there's a lot to be said for rather than starting with the question, what is a photograph? To begin with the technological question, what is photography? And, of course, he talks about this as a family of technologies for the marking of surfaces in various ways. Very important shift away from just the bold ontological question. The reason is because, in a way, the ontological question, as a philosophical approach, you could be talking about chairs or tomatoes or the identity conditions of anything, really. Whereas the question, what is photography, takes us in the direction we want to do. But, although quite a bit of what I'm going to talk about in my approach today is might at certain places look like it's answering these questions, what is a photograph, what is a photography artwork, that's not what I'm trying to do. What I'm actually trying to do is come at this from a completely different approach, where I'm approaching questions that are embedded in creative practice and critical practice. Now, I'm not a trained art historian, I can only go so far in that direction, but that's where I stand to benefit from an audience that contains photographers and art historians and theorists as well. So I'll welcome your input. So the creative question that I'm interested in is, how do artists create artworks in photography? That's what I'm actually primarily concerned to think about today. And the critical question, which is related but not the same thing, is what is it that we're appreciating when we appreciate art in photography? Now, of course, all of the questions that are lined up here are going to be interrelated in various ways, but I'm at least trying, as far as possible, to put my focus on the latter two questions and think about the interrelation between them. I can't promise I will absolutely succeed, but that's what I'm trying to do. Now, what I'm interested in here, of course, there's a long history of talking about photography in comparison with painting. So if you think about how do photographers create art, we might think about it, well, they're creating images in the way that painters are creating images, only differently. But that's not what I want to think about. I want to open up today a way of thinking about the creative practices of photography in relation to thinking of them in an analogy with musical creativity. And here's some provocative opening remarks from Ansel Adams to who, of course, was a trained pianist and considered a career in music rather than photography. So he says, musicians practice constantly. Most photographers do not practice enough. It's easy to take a photograph, and that notion of taking a photograph is going to be important. It's easy to take a photograph, but it's harder to make a masterpiece in photography than in any other art medium. Well, you might as well be bold about these sorts of claims, I think. But here's another interesting claim he makes. I can look at a fine art photograph and sometimes I can hear music. Now, I'm not actually going to be claiming that the analogy between photography and music works at the level of, you might say, the aesthetic properties of things like texture and tone and representational content and things like that. It's not that level that I'm interested in. I'm interested in the level, you might say that this is an example of the kind of critical question, you know. How is it that when we appreciate, that what is it that we're appreciating? So I'm not taking this literally that we hear music, but I am saying that when we appreciate a work of photography, there's something that there's a sense in which we're hearing the music, or at least hearing the musicians code. So here's a familiar anxiety that we've seen in the background to debates about the credentials of photography as a fine art. Edward Weston is saying here, perhaps if singers banded together in sufficient numbers, they could convince musicians that the sounds they produced through their machines could not be art because of the essentially mechanical nature of their instruments. Okay, so now Weston himself, unlike Ansel Adams, isn't particularly interested in pursuing the analogy between photography and music. He's much more interested to keep it as a completely separate discipline. But Ansel Adams repeatedly returns to this idea of an analogy, and it's the analogy between creating works of music and creating works of photography that I'm trying to focus on today. So, but anyway, that's, you know, that's familiar to you. Now here's Alfred Stieglitz talking about, again, what it is that the creative practice of photography takes for granted here. So, in engraving, he says, art stops when the engraver finishes his work, and from that time on, the process becomes a mechanical one. This is, of course, controversial, but again, he's setting out his pitch here for what the value of photography. To change the result, the engraved plate must be altered. But with the skilled photographer, on the contrary, a variety of interpretations may be given of a plate or negative without any alterations whatsoever in the negative. But, nonetheless, the negative may be at any time used for striking off a quantity of mechanical prints. Okay, which I think is a very interesting point here, that there are ways of talking about an automated arrival at a final image, but nonetheless that doesn't rule out the creative interpretive role. So that's what's in the background here. So here you go, here's the steerage with a number of different prints all struck off, and this repeatability about and multiplicity about the nature of photographic art, or the possibility of creating multiple instantiations of a work, is something that again is an important aspect of discussion. Perhaps it hasn't really arisen quite yet in the debates we've had, but this is what we're doing. And also a rendering like this, I think, is very important for when Laura was talking yesterday about the notion that this is a black and white work. Because you can see here, you know, what notion of black and white are we working with to say that these are all, because you can see really important differences between them when you're looking at it. So that was such an illuminating discussion for you to raise. Now, here's the interesting idea. This is the real motivation for this talk. This is what I want to discuss, and I want to say what I think is absolutely right and also what is slightly wrong about this idea from Ansel Adams. Photographers, he says, are in a sense composers, and the negatives are their scores. They first perform their own works, but I see no reason why they should not be available for others to perform. And Adams actually repeated this claim. This wasn't a one-off. He repeated this half a dozen or more times in different writings. It was a very central idea to his thinking. And he adds, if I could return in 20 years or so, I would hope to see astounding interpretations of my most expressive images. Now, one of the questions that was raised in the, or comments that was offered in the discussion yesterday, and I didn't know about this, but I went and looked it up afterwards, was this idea that Ansel Adams had been one of the people who had produced reprints of the Jacob Rice's work. And this is what he says in his preface to the collected works of the reprinted works. He says, "Those people live again in print as intensely as when their images were captured on the old dry plates of 60 years ago." So those old dry plates of 60 years ago, Adams was only 45 when he's writing this. So these old dry plates were produced before he was born. And also Adams was producing these reprints many years after the death of Rice himself. So we've got here an example, a nice example of a case where we might say that a composer has produced a score or a plate that is being reperformed, reinterpreted by an artist after the death using the score. But it's also this idea, these images that were captured on these old dry plates 60 years ago. So that was a nice linking, really, to show a real case. There are many other cases as well. We've had Lee Friedlander, who's done the reprints of Belloc, and all sorts of other interesting cases. So it's not like this doesn't happen. It's not a common feature, the composer-performer paradigm in photography. But actually, it's there when you need to look for it. So what I'm interested in, that I think he's getting right, that Ansel Adams, I want to say, okay, I agree with a version of what Ansel Adams is saying about the idea that photographers are, in a sense, composers. That's what I'm going to say, yes, we can make sense of that. Again, with the proviso, I'm not claiming that all art photography has anything like this model. I'm just saying there's a significant category of it that does. And I'm going to talk about how we might use music to think about other categories as well, but just within the composer-performer paradigm, I think that what's being said here about the idea of a photographer being a composer is pretty much the same thing as what the modernists are talking about when they're emphasising pre-visualisation. So you get Western, Stieglitz and Adams all talking about what it is for pre-visualisation. Here's Edward Weston's view. "The finished print must be created in full before the film is exposed. Until the photographer has learnt to visualise his final result in advance and to predetermine the procedures necessary to carry out that visualisation, his finished work, if it be photography at all, will present a series of lucky or unlucky mechanical accidents." Now, I'm not too worried about the contrast here with mechanical accidents and all that. I'm interested in this idea of what it is for a photographer to be pre-visualising, or in this sense, composing the work prior to actual performances of that work. If you take seriously this idea that the print, the visual print, is a performance, and this idea that a work of composition is taking place prior to the performance actually occurring. Now, it's important at this point to say that when I'm talking about the photography cases, what I'm meaning by composition is this notion of pre-visualisation. I'm not meaning by composition in photography what we ordinarily talk about composing or organising the features of the work in any sort of formal sense. So it's going to be a confusing notion here that I'm talking, I'm afraid, about composition, and we usually talk about that in photography. And I'm actually talking about composing, meaning a kind of creative pre-visualisation, the composition of the work. So, and when Weston himself talks about what's involved in what he calls the creative intuitive practices involved in pre-visualisation, he describes it in this way. He says, "What's known as my fine technique is simply an intelligent awareness of values and textures and the power of translating the image on my ground glass through comprehensive focusing and instinctive exposure into my silver emulsion. Thence onto the development of the latent image and the final printing in platinum." Now, of course, what's not surprising here is there's a sense that there are multiple stages at work here. And I think that what's tending to happen is that we've got the idea that that what's happening is that the task that's being, crudely here, because this, of course, Weston is talking about the nuances of exactly what he's doing and goes into the. But there's still a version here in what Weston is describing as being that you point the camera at the world. Of course, you know, That's shorthand for saying rather a lot of things happen in terms of the setting up of the camera and the choosing of the vantage point and the timing, all of that. Let's take for granted there's a lot going on there. But you point the camera, or you set the camera up in such a way that you then take a photograph, you develop the negative, and you print the photograph. So here, in a simplistic sense, is how we can map on the idea that the composer is producing a negative by you produce a negative, and then you use that negative as a score to print the photographs, and the photographs are going to be the performances from that score. Now, this is how I've caricatured the notion of what we've been describing yesterday, sort of the old view of photography, because once this sort of common sense notion of the stages involved in photography, or at least I should say here, of course, in this instance in chemical photography, in negative-positive process photography, is that we've got the idea that at the moment that you take a photograph, an image is in some sense registered in the photosensitive surface. There's an imprinting of an image at the moment of exposure. A causal registration of an image is produced at that moment. And that's what I'm criticising. That's what I'm trying to say. We need to pull apart something here. That's too quick to think that what's happening at that moment that you take a photograph is that you have seized an image from the world that's been causally registered through the light. Because the... this is another example. So I've tried to show in this example from Western that we get something like this description appearing when photographers are describing their work. And now I'll show how it happens when philosophers describe the work. So Guy Rohrbaugh saying here, photographs come into existence when they're taken. At the moment the button is pressed, the shutter opens and closes, exposing the film, and we say that we've taken a photograph. Okay, sure, we say we've taken a photograph. That's ordinary. But it's problematic philosophically to say this. Now, bearing in mind here, as I've already shown you, that Rohrbaugh is conflating the status of the photograph with the artwork anyway. But that's fine, because he actually is claiming that the artwork is a photograph. But nonetheless, it's a slippage we get problematically. He goes on to say, a photograph exists between the moment it is taken and the time at which the first print is made. And it exists after its prints, but not its negative, have been destroyed. So again, we've got some sense here of the idea that photography is inherently a medium that has multiple embodiments, that you can't just say of one particular print that it is the artwork when multiple prints are possible. And also the status of the negative in relation to the prints is crucial here to understanding this. But what you're still getting, and it can sound a little bit like it fits with the pre-visualization model, is this idea that the photograph has come into existence from the moment that the photograph is taken, from the moment that the film is exposed. And again, what I want to do is to get at what's right and wrong about that, mainly what's wrong, actually, but there is a little bit that's right. So here's the here's setting out my credentials to be part of the new philosophy of photography crowd, which is that, characterising in schematic form that there are multiple stages of any process that's truly a photographic process. So this is a kind of a contribution to answering the Patrick Maynard's question, what is photography? And it delivers an answer to the question, what is a photograph? But primarily through thinking about the process rather than thinking about the products. So I want to say that a dynamic light array is formed. Now, that dynamic light array might be a visual image, but in some cases it's not. A good example of a dynamic light array that is an image is if you go inside a camera obscura and you look at the screen and you can see the people moving as they're walking down the street inside the camera. That's what I mean by a light image in this case. You can actually see such a thing. And the point is that the image you see inside a camera obscura is a light image, but it's not a photograph, because no distinctively photographic event has taken place. The next thing that happens is the light that is being channeled, perhaps through an aperture, perhaps optically, onto a surface. When that surface is a photosensitive surface exposed to the light array, a photographic event occurs. Now, the event is the causal registration of light over a particular time interval. In other words, the photosensitive surface is reacting to and undergoing changes just because of light arriving on that surface. And I think of this now, I used to think of this as a recording of the light image. That's how I used to characterise it. But it was Simon Fleurier, one of the curators at the V&A, who actually said to me, oh, I really don't like this notion of recording, you know, this being a record, a recording. And actually, I can understand why, because it still leaves this idea that something is being recorded, that like an image is being recorded at that moment. And actually, that's not quite what I want to say. I want to say there's a registration of changes taking place. And that when that registration, the causal registration of light, comes to an end, what you're left with is a register. And I don't think the register there is quite the same notion as a record, actually, but it's a register of the light changes. So what I want to say is, when a photographic event has completed, a register exists, but no photograph exists. And by this, I'm now buying into the idea that when I talk about a photograph, I think that the notion we are working with is something that displays a visual image, something that has visual properties. And that notion of an image can be taken in quite extended senses in different ways, but nonetheless, there's got to be a visual object of appreciation that we're interested in. And when a register exists, the register doesn't have relevant visual properties. But nonetheless, we can use a register from a photographic event to then produce images. And indeed, we have to undergo a further stage before anything becomes visible to us as an image. And of course, the image that we arrive at has its causal history determined in the photographic event, but it's sort of underdetermined by the photographic event. In other words, many different images can be produced using the register. So what I'm trying to get away from is the idea that when a photographic event occurs and you have a register, I'm trying to get away from the idea that what has happened is you have created an image, and that is the image that we recover or retrieve or end up viewing. That's what I'm trying to get. I'm trying to say, no, the images that we end up taking an interest in and viewing are ones that have been produced thanks to their causal history in relation to the photographic event. But it's not because the image we end up seeing is the image that was taken when the photograph was taken. So let's see what I want to do with this. So going back then to the idea, if we take this extra pulling apart of the idea of a register on the one hand, which is not a photograph, and the image coming into production, which is a photograph, let's now return to see what's happening with the Ansel Adams idea. In a very broad terms, what I want to say is I want to support Ansel Adams's claim that photographers are, in a sense, composers. That's the bit I want to support and say, yes, we can make sense of that. That works. What I want to deny is the claim that negatives are scores. I want to say that prints are indeed performances. That bit's fine. But negatives are not scores. And here's it's not much of an argument, it's more of a sense, so I'm just going to appeal to your intuitions at this point, but I think it can be supported. The first couple of lines here, Adams is saying the negative is the score, the print is a performance. But think of it in terms of music. A score is inaudible. You don't hear a score. There's a debate here we can have about whether or not when you read a score you can imagine a performance. That's fine. I've got an account of how we deal with that. But the point is, a score itself isn't something that you hear. It doesn't have audible properties. A performance has audible properties, usually. You listen to it. But when you put that back in line with the debate about a negative and a print, we're suddenly reminded of the fact that actually a negative image is a negative image. It's already a visible image. So, obviously, the film negative-positive print process, we've got used to the idea of thinking that only the print is the photograph and the negative is merely a vehicle for arriving at it. We've got used to thinking of it like that. But philosophically, and in terms of the account that I've been offering, the production of a negative image is already something that has taken a register and has moved on a step in the process to producing something that's now a visible image. Again, we can have debates about the difficulty of actually viewing some kinds of negatives, you know, if they're particularly small or intractable. But, you know, it's still... The point is a process has been undergone to turn that into an image. So I'm denying that the negative is a score. I'm saying, if anything, a negative itself is a performance. It already counts as a performance. In which case, where's the score? What counts now as the score? So already that's a denial of the straightforward analogy as Adams wants to put it. But I want to say, okay, we can still work with the analogy. We just have to modify it. We have to show how it can work. So the exposed but undeveloped film is the score. That's what I'm claiming. I'm claiming, in other words, that the register from a photographic event is a score, and the making of a visible image is a performance from that score. The register has no relevant visual properties. The performance does. Now, here's the interesting point. A score in music typically has many possible performances. That's why we're so interested in it as a kind of an art form that makes possible multiple or repeatable instances. But the undeveloped film has also got the potential to produce many different photographs. Now, you might say, well, no, it doesn't. I mean, it's a photograph of something in particular, so the photograph... Okay, there's a sense in which, sure, the exposure of the film lays down certain features that the photograph is either going to have or not have. It's going to be counterfactually dependent in that sense in what was going on in the light array during the photographic event. That's fine. But my point is that, nonetheless, you can, when you produce the negative, when you develop the negative, it can acquire different qualities of contrast or grain or texture, depending on how you process it. If you put it in a different kind of chemical bath, you're going to get a different performance of that negative. So it's not that... I'm trying to get away, again, from the idea that, for example, there is the notion of a latent image embedded in an undeveloped film, such that what is happening when you develop it is you have exposed precisely that latent image. What I'm trying to say is, you could talk about there being innumerable latent images in the register, if you wanted to do things, but it's much better saying there's no image at all there. There's merely a score from which a variety of images can be produced, and those images are negatives that are going to have different visual properties. But if I'm right about that, and already going from the undeveloped negative to the developed negative is going from a score to one performance, when multiple performances would have been possible, multiple interpretations, you might say, would have been possible, then there's an interesting consequence to this if we're talking about chemical photography, which is that when you undertake that development process, it's a one-time-only performance in chemical photography. You've got the score, and I'm saying to you, you could perform it in many different ways, but when you perform it in one of these ways, you can't go back and re-perform it in a different way. You've had a kind of one time... Now, this is not sounding like music all of a sudden. This is sounding like it's going... But I'm saying, actually, this is where we do need to follow through some of the differences. This is where we shouldn't be led astray by the attractiveness of the analogy about negative, positive, and actually say, no, the production of an image in chemical photography is a one-time-only performance. Now, of course, what this can put back into place is... A lot of the creativity that the artists are interested in talking about is once they've produced a negative, then they're now going to work with that negative to produce positive prints. And in many cases, the positive prints are going to be offered to us as as objects for appreciation. So that's fine. This is where I think things really get interesting, thanks to the analogy. This is where it gets more interesting, not less. Because actually what happens is you can use a negative, and indeed, of course, actually, why limit yourself to just one negative? You can sandwich a few negatives, you can paste a few together, because what you're now going to do is you're going to use these negatives as objects in another photographic event. What you're going to do is you're going to use your negatives to create a new light image in the enlarged... I mean, if you want to, you can do a contact print. That still counts as the formation of a light image because you're just obscuring some areas and allowing light to pass through in others. So contact printing's fine, enlargement's fine. But you're using the negative as an object. In the same way that you might previously have taken light bouncing off the objects in front of your camera, you're now taking light passing through or bouncing off the negative, another object that you're using in the darkroom, to create another light image. And then you undertake another photographic event. This time you expose photosensitive paper to this new light image, and a photographic event takes place. And of course, it's interesting that in this second photographic event, dodging and burning and the kind of ways in which you can control the reaction of the photosensitive surface to the light arriving on it is now creatively part of the process. And what you've produced, when you've now got an exposed but undeveloped piece of photographic paper, you've got a new register. Because that register, whilst it's not got a visible image in it, is itself a new score, if we're following through the strict implications of this idea of a score versus performance idea. So the register is a new score, and as before, because this is still within the zone of chemical photography, that score is performed. But again, within chemical photography, it's a one-off performance. So every time you expose an individual piece of photosensitized paper to a light image, thanks to a photographic event, you produce a score which, when you develop that print, is a performance. And what I again mean by this is, when you've got your exposed but undeveloped piece of photosensitive paper, there are many different ways in which you can affect the qualities or the properties that that visual image is going to end up having. And partly this will be determined by your choice of the photographic paper in the first place, just like your choice of film would have made a difference to begin with. But also, again, your choice of chemical bath, your choice of whether or not you are, as Dermot described yesterday, rubbing areas of the surface to alter the temperature or affect it, or indeed, in some creative cases, adding unusual chemicals to the process. You know, there are ways in which the final print that you end up with is a performance that, again, is a one-off performance. Now, of course, that doesn't mean that you can't do lots more performances, but what I'm saying is there's a sense in which, and this again doesn't seem to fit the music paradigm, and I'm not trying to make it fit, but I'm just saying this is quite an interesting way of thinking about what's going on, is that you can use a negative on many different occasions to create many different light images, many different photographic events, each time you get a one-off performance. So of course, by the time you've got a sort of standardised procedure, you can create prints that have such similar qualities that we ordinarily call them copies of the same print. That's fine. But strictly speaking, they're not all performances from one score. Each one has got its own score and is a performance. Now, you're sort of thinking, okay, this is not, you know, suddenly the composer-performer thing seems like it's not quite fitting. But there's a lot more that can be said of this, because one of the funny implications of this is that we tend to think that just as classical music is held up as, you know, in the composer-performer paradigm, of course, historians of music will say, well, that's a very... putting that on a pedestal is a very narrow representation of the history of music. But nonetheless, there's a sense that you might think, well, the composer-performer paradigm is a classical paradigm, and recent musical innovations such as studio production, synthesizer sampling and everything are sort of a falling away from the greatness of the classical paradigm. So we might think about that. And similarly in photography, Ansel Adams and other modernists and things, the idea of a composer-performer paradigm that Adams is appealing to, again, it's got this appeal of it being that the greatness of the classical musical paradigm is appealing, and that modern photography might represent something, digital photography might be a falling away from the greatness of that paradigm. And actually, I'm saying, no, this turns it on its head. Because in actual fact, from what I've said, if you use chemical photography, every time you have a photographic event, you produce a new score. And every time you make a performance of that score, you can only do a one-off performance. But when you move to digital photography, now you're actually in the composer-performer paradigm. Because when you produce the register from a photographic event using digital technology, you're actually in the process where the production the move from going from the register to an image is something that you can do innumerable times, not just as a one-off. And that's because you haven't changed the material or chemical nature of the register when you have done that. The file, the digital file, the raw file can be accessed, the data from it can be retrieved many times and commit of many different images, many different performances, without irrecoverably changing the nature of the score. So in that sense, I want to say that chemical photography doesn't fit the ordinary composer-performer model, and that's because exposed but undeveloped film or a plate or a paper is a score that could be performed only once. But digital photography now does actually fit the composer-performer paradigm. And that's an interesting case. So let me mention then where I think this is sort of a sketch of where I think we can go in terms of answering what I called earlier the creative question. Creative question being, how do photographers create, how do artists create art in photography? This is just a pointer to where I think we can go. This isn't supposed to be a definitive answer to the question at this point, but I'm saying if we look in this direction of the composer-performer paradigm or an analogy of music, here's one way that we could answer the creative question. So the score, we can say, is the register from a photographic event, but that register is not itself a photograph. Performances are indeed photographs. They are visual images with all sorts of interesting aesthetic and visual qualities. Now, here's an interesting feature about kind of where our language can sometimes lead us astray a little bit of this, which is we can say a performer creates a performance. You might say a performer performs a performance. Of course, there's all sorts of things you could say. A performer produces a performance. But let's just say for now that a performer, I'm talking here about somebody who is, let's say, contributing an interpretive performance in some sense. Not just a mere mechanical performance, as Weston or Stieglitz would worry about. So a performer is creating a performance, but a composer does not just create a score. So if this, we've got this analogy between negatives and scores and performances and prints, as Adams would have it, then you could get in trouble by thinking, well, on the one hand, a photographer creates a negative, and on the other hand, the photographer creates the print. And I want to say, that's not really what we're interested in terms of the creativity. The score is admittedly a vehicle for, a way of giving expression to the composed work. It's one possible embodiment of the composed work. But actually what we're interested in is the fact that the composer has created a composition, and the composition is made accessible and recoverable in the form of a score, but don't mistake the score for the composition in that sense. So I think if we take this in the direction of photography, then what we can say is that an artist, just as Adams suggested, just as Weston in his terms of pre-visualization is suggesting, an artist does indeed compose or pre-visualize a work of photography. And the register from a photographic event is how they produce a score. So that's a way of saying that the creativity there is, you properly understand the act of creativity that an artist is undertaking who's working with photography. When you properly understand the way in which they have to control and manage and produce, bring into being a photographic event that will produce a register that has particular qualities. You rightly understand that this idea. So when we were talking yesterday about where the intervention can take place, where there is creativity in the process, part of what I'm wanting to do here is to make sense of the idea of what kind of artistic creativity is manifested in a photographic event. And I want to say that the way in which what's actually happening is an artist is composing through the photographic event, and the register from the photographic event is the score that is the outcome of that composition. So let's turn to the critical question, and I'll try to illustrate this with a couple of examples that might help as well. So that was the creative question, you know, how do we make sense of this claim that photographers are in a sense composers? Right, I think they are. So that has implications for the critical question. What is it that we appreciate when we appreciate a photography artwork? Or at least some photography artworks, because as I say, there is a broader range of cases here. So we can appreciate a musical performance, and we can appreciate a musical composition. And in a sense, when we're appreciating a musical performance, we are at the same time appreciating the musical composition in composer performing cases. And by that I mean that you can enjoy one performance that has quite different qualities to another performance, and yet in both of those performances you're still enjoying one and the same composition. And similarly, actually, you can absolutely hate a performance of a musical work. You can think this is a dreadful performance of the work, while still fully appreciating and admiring the composition. And that's one of the interesting, appreciative, critical features of music. And I think that that meaningfully translates across into the photography case, understood in this way. We can indeed appreciate an individual photograph, and we can appreciate the photography composition. Bearing in mind, I don't mean here composition as in the formal arrangement of art. I mean the composition as in the pre-visualization, the work of composition that has... the creative act that has been added here. And again, it makes perfect sense of the idea that you can think, when you encounter a particular print of a photographic work, you can think, that is an absolutely terrible print. That does not do justice to the work. You know, I have great admiration for this work, and this is a terrible print of it. And that's fine. We can and want to be able to make sense of photography. And indeed, we want to make sense of the idea that there can be multiple different interpretations and performances of a work of photography, perhaps undertaken by different performers, and they can have, importantly, different appreciable qualities. But here's the thing that I think the multi-stage process or the new philosophy of photography really helps us to realise here, is that in order to be able to appreciate photographic composition, in order to be able to appreciate pre-visualisation as something related to but also distinct from an individual performance, we've got to actually have a way to appreciate the photographic event, not just the photograph. And by this I mean... And again, it came up in discussion yesterday, which is why I found it so helpful. One of the comments yesterday was, isn't it the case that when we're looking at the visual object, it's got to make a difference to our appreciation that we know that there was a photographic event somewhere in its causal history? And I want to say, for this reason, that's exactly right. You have to be aware, because in other words, you can't appreciate the act of composition unless you know that that was an artist managing the photographic event, composing through the photographic event, and using the photographic event to produce a score. Unless you know something about that, or at least minimally know that it happens, then there's a sense in which you're just confronted with the individual visual object, and you're not simultaneously appreciating the composition. So that, I think, is a crucial point. So here's a couple of examples as if you're not persuaded entirely about that, let me show you the difference I think it makes. So here's an example that a lot of you will, of course, be familiar with. So Eugène Ager, any number of examples from sort of the streets of Paris, of course, described in most interesting detail by Benjamin, among others. And so this occupies a particular place in sort of photography theory as well. Increasingly, I think philosophers are tuning into that a wee bit. So what's interesting about an example like this is that if you don't already know the history of Ager's creative processes here. And again, this is very much in the tradition of saying Ajay himself was not taking himself to be creating artworks in a lot of cases. So it's a bit like the rice example, at least in some cases. I think arguably with some... So in other words, you could... Everything I'm going to say about this having... being an example of an interesting case where we can appreciate the composition through the photographic event doesn't hinge on this being an artwork at this point, although they have been recovered as artwork subsequently. So when Ajay was producing one of these images, we could look at one of these images and be affected by, struck by the aesthetic of the deserted streets of Paris, these sort of hauntingly empty streets with no signs of human life. But of course, as many of you will know, what's actually happening here is that Ajay has chosen to use camera technology that requires long exposures for his photographic events. So this means that when you have a long exposure for the photographic event, moving objects passing through the street, people, horses, carriages, and so on, weren't stationary long enough for the light reflected from them to register in the register from the photographic event. So in actual fact, during the photographic event, there were people and horses and things moving through the street, and they played a role in how it is that the register from the photographic event had its final properties. They were part of the photographic event in my sense. But I think, and this is the crucial thing, that although you don't see them in the visual image, when you learn something about the nature of that photographic event, it affects your aesthetic response to this image. I think you properly understand an image of this kind, not just when what you see is the scene in front of you, but when you understand that there were people and horses and carriages moving through this street at the very time the photographic event occurred. And that's what I'm trying to get at. That sense, if you are affected by the thought, yes, that can change what it is that I appreciate here. That's my point about what we're trying to appreciate. And here's another example. And actually, this is a good example as well. I'm trying to sort of tune into some of the themes that we discussed yesterday. So here's a good example of what Bense might talk about as an attempt for a 2D, two-dimensional arrangement of the objects on the surface. And the reason why we can be so... I mean, there is overlap here, don't get me wrong. There are things, you know, there is occlusion. But the reason I want to say to you that there's a definite sense here that the aesthetic motivation is a 2D one is that Philip Hausman took well over a dozen different attempts at this shot. Yeah, well over. I mean, I think they spent a whole day doing this, and it's about 35 attempts or something. So you might say 35 different photographic events. Now, so... In other words, so the arrangement that we've ended up here, where you can distinctly see the cats and the chair, and they're not occluding one another, all the key elements are not occluding one another, is precisely the visual effect that Hausman was seeking. And we know that because if we look at the contact sheet, there's all sorts of ones where there's a cat across Dali's face and things like this, okay? So this one has been chosen properly. The important thing here, and this is again what I want to get to. Now, within digital photography, you could see an image of this kind, and fine, okay, we've got two cats here, a chair, some water. We could have put these elements in. Of course, we could have also put these elements in through multiple exposures in the darkroom, studio setting. There are many different ways in which we could have arrived at this image using photographic means. But I think it makes an aesthetic difference if what you learn is that an assistant was holding... one, I think it might have been, it was either Dali's wife or Halston's wife, actually, was holding the chair in one direction. And on a count of three, Dali jumped in the air, one assistant threw a bucket of water, and the other assistant threw three cats. Okay, now that's what was actually going on during the photographic event. And I think that makes an aesthetic difference to you when you know that about the photographic event. And when you know that Hausman produced 30-odd attempts in order to produce exactly a configuration that has precisely the kind of quality, I mean, you might say, you know, in the name of surrealist qualities here rather than strictly modernist ones, but the same applies. So I think that makes a difference, and I think that's one of the ways that you can understand notions of composition. And of course, it gets us away slightly from the idea that the work of composition is always just a, you know, this sense I've been giving you, you have a work of composition, then you have a performance, and that's that. Of course, there's nothing stopping a photographer, as it were, recomposing one and the same work over and over and over until the score is the score that is wanted to produce the final print. So that's again where, well, to be honest, that's where photography and music are also similar. So let's talk about this idea. I've talked about composer-performer, and I've tried to say, actually, I don't think composer-performer is quite the most helpful way of thinking about chemical photography, unless you think of it being as a double-level composer-performer point. But I think the notion that we need to be using here is something more like arranging. And again, if you're looking at it in musicology, then the notion of an arrangement is something more than just a composition and a performance. You've also got lots of other different kinds of musical categories we can help with here. So an arrangement is, I want to say that an arrangement, you can take a positive print that they use in a darkroom, rather than thinking of that positive print as being, in some sense, the performance of a negative, you can think, well, okay, you've got a composed work. The negative itself is a composed work, is a performance, indeed, of a composed work. And you might think that what's happening in the darkroom is a bit more like an arrangement or a rearrangement of a previously composed work. I think we can go in something like that direction. And it's interesting, exactly in that case, that when Ansel Adams is talking about it, go back to a quote of his, he says, just as a musician hears notes and chords in his mind ear, so can the trained photographer see, and by this he means visualise, certain values, textures and arrangements in his mind's eye. And again, Ansel Adams is a highly trained professional musician. When he says arrangements, he knows what he means by arrangements here rather than performance. And I think that that's a helpful direction to go in. So I won't say much more about that because I want to talk about a few other examples. But I just want to say, rather than just thinking composer-performer, we've actually got a lot of different interesting cases here. Take sampling for a notion in the music industry. So again, thinking about we think more about this in terms of digital music industry, but of course it predates the digital music industry. You could do it with vinyl and other things. So sampling is taking an extract of a performance. In other words, you're taking the audible performance, taking an extract of a performance, not just an extract of a composition. So it's not taking a few bars from a score. It's taking a sample of an actual audible performance and incorporating that into a different work of music. Well, okay, that's taking a photograph of another photograph, perhaps. So the kind of interesting creative practice that's been explored by Sherry Levine and Richard Prince, among others. We could, actually, if we wanted to be problematising things even further, as if it wasn't now problematic enough, but if you want to problematise things a bit further, maybe you could say that all negative, positive photography is a form of sampling. That what you're doing when you put a negative in an enlarger and you expose a photographic paper to that is, if I'm right and the negative is itself already a performance, then there's a sense in which you are sampling from that performance when you're producing your new work, maybe. It's all sorts of different directions. I prefer the arrangement model, actually, rather than the sampling model in general for that one. But sampling is definitely a creative practice within photography that's significant. Improvising. My first thought with thinking about improvising was thinking about street photography, thinking about something about the spontaneity, you know, instead of this sort of model of, you know, intense pre-visualization and the exact lining up of everything that Western and Steinitz and others thinking about. I first thought that, but in a way, I just think that it's still not quite right, because I think that improvising, we need to get something more about the idea that improvising is a performance which, in a sense, is including aspects that haven't been composed prior to the performance. In other words, ways in which spontaneous developments, perhaps even surprising or experimental or even accidental aspects of the performance can take on and be woven into the form. Of course, improvising can still have as its basis a pre-existing composition or notion, but the improvising then just works in there. And I think that something like solarization, actually, during the printing or indeed negative developing process, is a quite good example about that. It's kind of the introduction of something during we have the register, which is not a photograph. We're bringing into being a visual image, which is a photograph. But in the very process of bringing about that performance, solarization, with all its associated features of having slightly uncontrollable features, it's not to be entirely anticipated quite what the features of solarization are going to be until they happen. Solarization might be more what I'd be interested in for a notion of improvisation. And then finally, I'll just say one or two more things before, and then I'll finish. In a way, what I'm getting to now, as you can see, I'm sort of throwing out some of the different ways. It's not, you know, if you get the general idea that I'm trying to go in direction, then I think there's a lot of potential here to think about creative and critical practice in alignment with this. But this is by no means firm claims at this point. Conducting. Why I think conducting can get it. I mean, you might say, okay, there's conducting going on. If you've looked at anybody's contact sheets, and if you've looked at somebody's the rehearsals, as it were, from somebody's contact, where they've marked out areas that need to be dodged and burned and instructions, you might say, well, that looks like a kind of conducting. It's a way of instructing others how they could bring about a performance, maybe. But I think there's a more interesting way of thinking about conducting, which is if we remind ourselves that not only is photography a medium in which there can be multiple instances of a work, but also not every artwork in photography is a single image. And there are many photo books or many instances of a series or a sequence where the series in its entirety could rightly be thought of as the artwork. Now, that's distinct from the notion of an exhibition. So, of course, an exhibition can contain many individual artworks. I'm interested in the idea that you can have something where there are multiple prints, but it is an artwork in its entirety. And I think that conducting is quite helpful here, because what conducting does is it produces a kind of unifying principle of elements that might otherwise not align with one another. And the unifying principles can include things like timing, expression, emphasis. And I think a good example of that, I like Lee Friedlander's series Sticks and Stones, where you go in and you look at the first few. This struck me completely out of the blue. It's one of the first photography exhibitions. I wasn't aware of Lee Friedland before, and I happened to just walk into a place and look at these images on the wall. And the first few, and after looking at one and two, and then noticing that there were shadows of the photographer appearing and reflections of the photographer appearing, and suddenly getting this uncanny feeling that everything was at a 20 degree angle, or every horizon was uncannily at a 20 degree angle, I suddenly thought, I went from seeing these as individual prints that I was supposed to be appreciating in their own, to suddenly realising I was appreciating this as a unified work. And I think conducting might help us there. And then I will finish off by saying, look, further performance, we can talk about the difference between a live performance and a studio recording. I think Theodore Gratchik's work on rock music ontology is brilliant here, because he wants to say that the ontology of rock music is the studio recording is not a performance of a work, it is the work. Okay, so I think that's helpful for us. I haven't said anything yet about the status of reproductions, because, of course, everything that I've screened here for you is not a performance, in my view. It's a reproduction of a performance, I think, or it's a recording of a performance. Synthesizers and so on. Many different ways in which we can look to music to enhance our sense of the creative and critical question. But my pitch to you, you might be persuaded by elements of this in general anyway, I hope, but I also want to say to you that this is one of the merits of the new philosophy of photography, that what it makes available to us by pulling apart this sense, everything here that I've said hinges on the idea that when a photographic event occurs and you have a register from the photographic event, there is as yet no image there. Everything hinges on that, because the rest of what I said doesn't work if you think you've already got an image at the moment that you've taken a photograph. So that's why it is that I think that the convincingness of this really rests on this new philosophy of photography. Thank you.